Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. I'm just looking at CNN on the monitor here. It's saying that Stormy Daniels' attorney asking for recordings of Mr. Cohen to be released. It's yet another update in what is a daily barrage of information about federal investigations into allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. We have the separate investigation that's going on into the payments to Stormy Daniels over an alleged one-night stand with Donald Trump before running for the presidency. And the man who has to keep up with all this is our next guest, Adam Schiff, Democratic member of Congress, Glendale, Burbank, a sliver of Pasadena and surrounding communities. Congressman, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be with you.
I have to admit, you know, I'm dealing with the Russia investigation regularly on the program, and I have a very hard time keeping up with all the different aspects of this. Do you struggle with this?
Well, I do, because there are a lot of different sources of information. Certainly, we continue to learn more as our investigation progresses. But there's a lot of great public reporting about it. And many tentacles, many investigative threads that are being pursued by the special counsel. So it is a lot to keep track of. And one of the challenges, I think, for the public is there's so much information that has come to light, but it's come in drips and drabs. And being able to put the pieces together and see what the picture looks like is very hard. But increasingly, that picture looks pretty incriminating. And, you know, if we started out the investigation and within a single week we learned about the secret meeting at Trump Tower and the emails that preceded it that talked about this being part of the Russian government's effort to help elect Donald Trump, and there were all the false statements about the nature of that meeting, that would be so damning. It might have forced a change in the administration. But because it came out in small bits, it's had the effect of, I think, anesthetizing us to the seriousness of what we've already learned.
Well, and the other thing is we live in a world now where things are so polarized that you've got a large portion of the electorate that sees this through one prism and the other portion seeing it through the other. So how do you see your job? You're obviously speaking to Democrats first and foremost, your own party. But is there any way you feel it's possible to cross over to Republicans today?
Well, I think that's very important. And actually, I try to speak in a way that Republicans will also hear what I have to say. And one of the ways that I try to point out just how polarized we are and how we need to try to get beyond that is I ask my Republican colleagues, what if I told you that there was a secret meeting at the Clinton headquarters attended by Chelsea Clinton and Robbie Mook, who was the Clinton campaign manager? And it was preceded by word from Moscow that they were going to dispatch a delegation to meet privately in the Brooklyn headquarters as part of the Russian government's effort to help elect Hillary Clinton. And they had damaging information to provide on Donald Trump. And let's say the Clintons lied about that meeting and said it was about something it was not about and concealed the true purpose of the meeting. Would my Republican colleagues think that the Clintons were colluding with the Russians? Now, of course, that they would. But they're unable to see it, even though it's in plain sight, because it dealt with the Trump campaign. And this is part of the challenge.
Well, of course, you know, part of this comes out of, as you well know, Republican view that Democrats have been trying to delegitimize the presidency of Donald Trump from the beginning and using the allegation of Russian collusion to try and make the case he really shouldn't be president. He's not fairly president. And so part of this, of course, comes from this view that this isn't only about the investigation, but an ulterior motive.
Well, you know, certainly that is a narrative that the president has wanted to advance, to say this is a witch hunt, this is a hoax, this is just the Democrats who want to take away, this is what he tells his supporters, they want to take away your great electoral victory, the greatest electoral victory in the history of the Republic. And, you know, it's a message that resonates with his supporters, but it is part of the narrative the president wants to tell. The reality is, of course, the investigation into whether individuals associated with the Trump campaign were colluding with the Russians or being suborned as Russian agents began even before the election and proceeded quite independently of anything the Democrats had to do with it because of these national security concerns. But nonetheless, I think it's a narrative that the president sees profit in his telling.
Now, and that is, of course, true that this investigation began before then. But you're not willing to cede any of the president's or his supporters' characterization that this has been linked comes at least in part from an effort to try and undermine his presidency without, at this point, having evidence that the president himself was involved in any sort of collusion.
No, I don't view it that way at all. I think this is a not only legitimate but very necessary investigation into foreign meddling in our election in a very close election in which the Russians used a variety of vectors to try to influence outcomes. That demands investigation. I think that's essential that it be done. Yes, there are certainly lots of people who wish Donald Trump never became president and hope that he is somehow removed from office. But that doesn't mean that the investigation is not legitimate or necessary. You know, I will say this, though, Larry. I think to the degree that people are out there pushing impeachment right now, before the investigation is concluded, before we even know the full extent of the evidence, that's a mistake. And that plays right into that narrative that the president is trying to tell, which is they just want to nullify the election. That's what this is about. They haven't even seen the evidence yet. They haven't even seen the conclusion of the investigation. And they're already racing to embrace the solution that they want from the very beginning. I think it plays into the Trump argument to his base. And I think that's a mistake. I think we ought to let the investigation conclude. Well, we ought to see what the evidence is, and then we can make a decision about what the right remedy is.
We're talking with Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. He is the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, the congressman from Southern California. If you have questions you'd like me to ask him, you can put them on the AirTalk page at kpecc.org, or you can join us at 866-893-KPECC. You'd made comments about, you know, the president characterizing there's a spy that was within his campaign that the FBI was using to try and undermine his candidacy. That was the president's characterization of this. And you talked about that, and I'll let you restate your criticism of the president making that kind of claim.
Well, it's a complete falsehood. And this is, I think, one of the most corrosive things to our democracy that we've seen from this administration. And that is these repeated falsehoods coming from the White House that are further propagated by Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Kellyanne Conway that try to create an alternate reality for Trump supporters to live in. And the most recent example and most flagrant example is this idea the president keeps promoting that the FBI and the Department of Justice embedded political spies in his campaign. Now, there's no truth to that. And in fact, one of our committee members, Trey Gowdy, not somebody I usually quote, given the Benghazi hell that he put the country through, acknowledged as much just the other day and said that he shares the view that I expressed after the meeting we had with the Department of Justice, that what they did was perfectly appropriate. But more than that, this tearing down of the FBI, this continual suggestion that the FBI is some secret society that is, determined to tear down the presidency, a deep state, is so destructive of these institutions and destructive of public confidence in them. The long-term damage is just extraordinary.
Well, this isn't the first time, though, that we've had partisan criticism of the FBI. I mean, this goes back to the J. Edgar Hoover days, where people have questioned the ways in which the FBI has conducted investigation. I mean, it's not that it's been a totally apolitical organization in its history.
Well, there were certainly times, and that was one of them, when the FBI was not apolitical and was engaged in conduct it should not have been engaged in. But this is the first time in modern history where you have the president of the United States, aided and abetted by allies in Congress, making false accusations repeatedly against the hardworking people at the FBI, not because this is part of an oversight responsibility or constructive criticism, but rather to undermine an investigation into the president's own people and maybe the president himself. That makes this markedly different. This is an effort to impeach the credibility of the FBI so that whatever conclusion Bob Mueller reaches can be discredited. There's nothing salutary about that. There's nothing truthful or laudatory about that. It's just plain destructive and done in the service of the president, which is not consistent with the rule of law.
We're talking with Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, Glendale, Burbank, a portion of Pasadena as well. He mentioned Trey Gowdy earlier, who was interviewed by Martha McCallum on Fox News yesterday and talked about Congressman Schiff's comments as part of President Trump's frustration on the Russia investigation continues. We edited Congressman Gowdy's comments here just for brevity.
Schiff said he had evidence of collusion before we even began the investigation, and 60 Democrats have voted to impeach him before Bob Mueller has come up with a single solitary finding. But remember, Martha, it was President Trump himself who said, number one, I didn't collude with Russia, but if anyone connected with my campaign did, I want the FBI to find that out. It looks to me like the FBI was doing what President Trump said I want you to do, find it out. He's not the target. So when Schiff and others don't make that clear, they're doing a disservice to our fellow citizen.
Congressman Schiff, your response to your colleague on the committee.
Well, Mr. Gowdy doesn't know whether the president is a target or not. He's relying on Rudy Giuliani, which is a poor place to put your reliance. The reality is that Mr. Gowdy and my colleagues, several of my colleagues in the majority, have not wanted to see the abundant evidence of collusion, the evidence that's in plain sight. And too often throughout the course of the investigation saw their role as being the defense counsel for the president. And that's traditionally how Trey Gowdy has seen his role. When we issued our minority views recently, we excerpted in them an interchange between Mr. Gowdy and Andrew McCabe, in which Andrew McCabe was talking about how Jim Comey would verify his conversations with the president in discussions with him, speaking generally in a way that corroborated what James Comey had to say. In the excerpt that we published, and this was a perfect illustration, Trey Gowdy asked McCabe, what's the problem with suggesting that Comey drop the Flynn case? After all, the president could just pardon him, so what's the problem with that? Now, that's an argument you'd expect Rudy Giuliani to make, not an objective investigator. And he would go beyond it, and he would ask questions along the lines of, how is asking for leniency for Mike Flynn any different than what happens in every courtroom around the country when family members ask a judge for leniency in sentencing for a family member? Now, those are not investigative questions by somebody who should know better. Those are political arguments in support of the president. And that's been the problem all along, and I think that's what's blinded Mr. Gowdy to the evidence of collusion, which is in plain sight.
As we continue, I want to talk about the effect this whole investigation has had on partisan relations on the committee, because this is a committee, if I'm not mistaken, historically seen as working pretty well across party lines. That doesn't seem to be the case today, so we'll talk with Congressman Schiff about that. Also talk about the midterm elections, Democrats' hopes of taking the majority on the House. That coming up with Adam Schiff, Congressman representing Glendale, Burbank, portion of Pasadena, Hollywood, West Hollywood, Los Feliz, surrounding communities. Tear Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be back with more right after a live update from Hetty Lynn Hurdies. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We're with Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, Glendale, Burbank, part of Pasadena, surrounding communities, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. And he has been the voice largely for his party, their concerns about how the investigation been conducted by the Intelligence Committee, and also the president's daily barrage of tweets against Bob Mueller's investigation. If you have questions for him, you can call us at 866-893-KPCC or post on the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. I'm sure you're not surprised, Congressman, that we have people that are posting they'd like you to run for president in 2020. You've been talked about in that context. Would you consider a run?
Well, I have to say, I continue to be surprised that people are posting I should run for president. I haven't gotten over the initial shock of that. About a year ago, I was doing an interview with Katie Couric, and she was the first to say, would you consider running for president? And I said, no. And she said, well, why not? And I didn't have a particularly good answer, I guess because I hadn't really thought about the question before. You know, I think right now the focus for all of us, even those who are in the 2020 field, ought to be on taking back the House of Representatives and the Senate if we can. There's, to me, nothing more important between now and November than that, because I've never been more worried about the health of our democracy. And the most immediate thing we can do to put a check on the damage that's being done is by changing the majority in Congress. So that's, you know, I've got kind of blinders on right now and looking at nothing other than that.
You've been traveling all over the country, though, raising your profile not just on television, but in personal appearances around the country as well. Is that only around the midterms, or is this about raising your profile nationally?
Well, it certainly had the benefit of raising my profile nationally, but it has been directed to helping my colleagues in the midterms. And I probably, you're right, been in 15 or 20 states in the last few months. I don't know if I'm coming or going, but you know, do events like yesterday. I was in Nevada doing an event for Steve Horsford, who's running to reclaim his seat in the House. But I've been in New Mexico and South Carolina and Illinois and New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and elsewhere, really trying to flip the House. And, you know, I always felt that just doing a good job was probably the best campaigning you could do. And I suppose that's true nationally as it is in your own district. But that focus has really been on flipping the House.
Here in Southern California, as you know, we've got a number of key districts that have been held by Republicans. The Democrats think the time is ripe to flip those. But you've got multiple Democratic candidates who are competing against each other in the whole top two system. You have any critique about the party not, you know, getting behind one particular candidate in each of these seats instead of having the free-for-all that we're facing next week's election?
Well, I have to say I hate this jungle primary system because it is so rife for mischief. You have people trying to select their opponent in the opposite party's primary, and then you have the fact that so many Democrats are running right now, which has been a wealth of riches around the country. But in a jungle primary system, that's a disadvantage. The party is in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. When the party does intervene, it's usually resented by the local Democratic community. Why are you trying to tell us who our nominee should be? If the party doesn't intervene and no Democrat ends up advancing, then people ask, why didn't the party get involved? I think the party has been relatively smart about picking and choosing, not weighing in unless it's absolutely necessary, weighing in many of these races to boost Democratic turnout, not necessarily picking a favorite, but making sure that at least one Democrat gets the general. But there's no good or easy answer here. You can't simply tell people not to run. It's an American right to run for office. But it's a really hard dilemma for the party, particularly when there is still a division between the Bernie and Hillary camps, and any intervention by the party is seen through the prism of, well, this is the party just doing what it did before, or now weighing in on the other side. And that can cause more problems than it solves.
I don't want to overstate the significance of these kinds of hypothetical polls they do, but just looking at the general electorate, comparing the two parties, we've seen some of the recent polling that in hypothetical matchups, Republicans are doing somewhat better than they were earlier this year. Democrats still holding an advantage, though. And how much of this do you think might be a result of Democrats sort of leading with the anti-Trump message as opposed to a pro-Democratic message? How much of it do you think has to do with maybe President Trump's tax cuts are starting to be seen positively by a significant part of the electorate? To what do you attribute this?
Well, look, you know, the numbers were always going to narrow. The Democratic generic ballot lead was so stratospheric that there was no, I think, expectation that that would persist. But what has persisted and what gives me reason for a lot of optimism about the midterms is there is a level of intensity among progressives to turn out, to make a difference, to change the government, to reclaim the direction of the country that shows no sign of abatement. And in each of the off-time elections that we have seen during the course of this session, the swing has been profound. The swing has been anywhere from 5 to 25 points in the Democratic direction. I think that's going to continue. And I'd like to say this is the result of very clever strategizing by the Democratic Party or great organization by the Democratic Party. The reality is, though, it's completely organic. It's about 100 or 1,000 organizations that have sprung to life around the country that are getting involved, phone banking, turning people out, registering voters, and thank God they're doing it because our rule of law is really being tested right now. Our democracy is really being tested, and I think for all of us, we need to figure out what can we do in our public capacity, our private capacity, our civic and corporate capacity. At a time when the country really needs us, when a lot of the things that we took for granted are now very much in question. So I think, yes, there's going to be a narrowing of the polling, and the president's numbers are ticking up. That, I think, is to be expected. At the same time, the intensity of those who are determined to change the direction of the country shows no sign of abatement, and that's what this election is going to be about.
And you're confident that Democrats will flip the House?
I am. I think that, you can never take anything for granted, and we certainly can't here. But I would bet that we take back the House. And part of that is based, as I mentioned, on the intensity. But part of it is also based on the fact that we have really dramatically expanded the playing field. We have the most incredible group of candidates around the country, many of them running in very difficult districts where you were lucky to get any Democrat to run. But these are people who are former combat veterans. A tremendous number of our candidates are women, which is great because it'll change the nature of the Congress very much for the better. But it's also great because women win. They're great candidates. And these are candidates who have started small businesses, started large businesses. They have done multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're the most impressive group of candidates I've ever seen. And so we won't win all those races, but I think we'll win enough of those races to take back the House.
Adam Schiff, Democratic member of Congress from Southern California, joining us on Air Talk. We'll continue with him when we come back. We'll talk about the Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, and if Democrats take the House, whether she's the right person to be the speaker or whether Democrats need to look for someone else to lead the party in the House. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be back in just 1 minute. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. We're talking with Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. That's why you've seen him so frequently on television over the last year plus. He's joining us while here in Southern California to talk about a number of important political issues, as well as the ongoing Russia investigation by Robert Mueller and within Congress itself. Nancy Pelosi poised to be the Speaker of the House if Democrats retake the majority. Is she the right person for that job? Or given how polarizing a figure she is it time for the party to look for other leadership?
Well, she's the most talented leader we have in the Congress. Certainly the best strategist we have. She's able to keep a very diverse caucus of Democrats all on the same page, which it would be very easy, given what the country is going through right now, for Democrats to be at each other's throats. But under her leadership, we have been all pulling in the same direction to make sure we take back the House. She has been pilloried for years in the press and by the Republicans that have spent a ton of money to demonize her. The reality is, the reality is that anyone in that position now is going to be subject to that. I joke to people that if they see me on Fox, I'm a completely different person than they see me on any other channel. And, there's just no avoiding the cumulative impact of these persistent attacks. Oh, absolutely. I because I'm more recognizable now, I become a bit of a human focus group. And this gets to the polarization you were talking about, Larry. I remember getting off the train at Penn Station and the first New Yorker coming up to me, I'd walked about 5 feet and stops me and says, "Are you Adam Schiff? I just want to shake your hand. You're my hero," which I enjoyed for about a millisecond until the next New Yorker came up to me and got in my face and said, "Well, you're not my hero. Why are you eavesdropping on our conversations and leaking them to the press?" And I realized just how divided a society we are. But, you know, a lot of that animus on Fox and by the president, et cetera, is directed at Nancy Pelosi. And it, you know, it takes a toll on anyone. But she is, I think, the most capable leader that we have. And at this point, no one comes close. There will be a time when there's a generational change. And I can't tell you when that change will be. But right now, I think she's the most capable leader we have.
Do you think you would be a good House Speaker?
You know, I don't know. I have a certain skill set. Whether that is the right skill set for that job, I don't know. It requires you to be a good messenger for the party, but it also requires you to keep together that very diverse caucus. It requires you to have a good sense of strategy about how to work the legislative process and know what you can get in negotiations with the other party and know when it's best to fight, know when it's best to make a deal.
Do you think you have those? Because it almost seems like part of that it is experience, but also instincts about that. And not everybody would have that. Do you feel like you have that?
Well, one of the things that Nancy has, which, you know, I don't think you know whether you have that until you get in that position, is because she has the confidence of the progressives, which are the majority of our caucus, that when she makes the conclusion that, okay, this is a good deal for us, and now no deal is perfect, and you have to give as well as get, but because she has the implicit trust of the progressives, when she concludes, okay, this is a good deal, this is the best deal we can get, they're ready to accept that. Whether other people will have that same confidence is very hard to say. This is why whoever does take that job, whenever that time comes, is going to find out just how damn difficult it is.
Congressman, you've been very clear about your criticism of the president and your colleagues in the Congress. But I'd like to hear your critique of your own party, whether it's talking about impeaching the president at this point or anything. What do you think? What concerns you about your party's conduct that you think is counterproductive?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, I think it's counterproductive to be pushing the impeachment before the investigation has even been completed. There's a lot we don't know. I probably know as much as anyone in Congress about the state of the evidence, but there's a lot I don't know that Bob Mueller does, and I'd like to know what he does. I assume at the end of his investigation, in addition to whatever indictments he seeks and are returned, that he'll make a report to the Department of Justice that will be presented to the Congress, and I hope and expect to be presented to the public as well. So let's wait for the investigation to finish. The other thing I would say is that I think the Democratic Party needs to work on its brand, recapture its brand. As much as I admire the job that Barack Obama did as President of the United States, he built his own brand, but he didn't build a brand for the party. And the problem with that is the moment he left office, people were again asking, what does the Democratic Party stand for? Our brand has always been the party that fights for working people in their everyday struggles to get a job, to get an education, their fight with the bank or the mortgage company, their fight to get health care. We were by the side of the working person in their daily struggles. The Republicans have successfully caricatured the Democratic Party as being the party of the elite, a party that looks down on people. That is a stigma that we need to fight much more effectively.
And some of your candidates have played right into that.
You know, some have played into that. A lot of our candidates, frankly, are doing a great job in rebranding the party and relating to people around the country and making the case. Connor Lamb, I think, for example, ran a flawless campaign in western Pennsylvania, focused on meeting the needs of his constituents, and that's what we have to do.
But you still have the problem. I mean, if you say that's the brand of the party, where the, you know, the working class person is struggling to make ends meet, you've got a progressive wing that has one way of doing that with a very governmentally intensive. You've got another group of Democrats, albeit a smaller one, who is going to see, you know, more of this is coming from small business, more of this is coming from people having control. I mean, that's still going to be a challenge when you get to policy.
Well, it is. And, you know, we're not a monolithic party. We're a big tent party, and we, you know, welcome diversity of view within the party. But that's a challenge when you're a small, narrow ideological party, as the Republican Party has become. It's much simpler. You know, I like to joke.
We even see some divisions there, though, when it comes to votes on actual bills.
Well, you know, historically we've had a division, at least within the last 10 years, of the Tea Party with the rest of the Republican conference. But the Tea Party ideology now infects the entire Republican caucus. And actually, the Republican Party has become the Trumpist party. So it has become unified in that way. And this is one of the startling things, Larry, is this flawed person in the Oval Office has completely remade the Republican Party in his image.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Larry.
Congressman Adam Schiff.